So I think we have to start with this warm weather, which is wonderful for this time of year, but of course it brings up the everlasting issue of potholes and road construction. Has that even started yet?
Well, we're out doing a few pothole repairs, but you know, the winter wasn't that bad. We didn't have that real, you know, sub-zero freezing, and then you have the melting and then the refreezing. We just didn't have that this year. So yes, you always have potholes, but so far they've been pretty minor and pretty manageable. So we're going through that process, picking up a lot of limbs, you know, from the winter kind of a thing, and getting the potholes fixed is the primary focus of the street department since we haven't had to, you know, remove much snow.
Last Thursday night, you had kind of sounded like a doctor's report, so to speak, of a way to get the city back on good financial track. And one of those parts will be introduced this Thursday, and that's this ordinance that would allow a waste and a trash fee to be collected. Can you give us a little bit of a brief overview of what's all included in that?
Sure. It's really pretty simple when it comes down to it, because what it amounts to is that we have a contract with Republic Services to pick up the trash in the city of Terre Haute. Costs us about $2.6 million a year to do that for about 23,000 households. And because of the property tax cap losses, and that's the part that really gets people, they assume we're still getting the same amount of money and we're looking for this new fee. It's not that at all. We've lost $12 million a year in funding. And so, and out of that, $10 million of that used to go directly to pay for things like this contract, because that's what's in the general fund, and that's how much we lose each year in the general fund. So what we need to do, we don't have to make up $10 million, but I need to be able to continue to pay for this contract. So what's gonna happen is this fee will be go into a non-reverting fund that will only be used to pay for the trash contract. So when people pay this fee, they will know that the only place, the only use of those funds will be for the Republic contract, so we can continue to keep coming out, getting their four pickups, you know, once each week, four times a month, plus all their large item pickup. All that will still be in place.
Does any of this include any recycling or curbside recycling here in Terre Haute?
Not any more than what we already do. You can, you know, get through with Republic, you can get that done at your house. We've got about 300 plus households that do that out of the 23,000. And so to try to make this part of this fee would be very expensive for us. If you said, Republic, we want to recycle at all 23,000 households, we'd have to redo the contract. And so it's just not going to work at this point. Now, what we're going to do, though, is offer some recycling alternatives that we don't have today. And so we'll talk more about that in the future once we get some things worked out with Republic. We won't be able to do it at people's houses, but we believe we can set up some opportunities for people that'll be very convenient.
I see some numbers came out June 1st of this year looking at somewhere around $12.50. Is that set or is that still kind of up for negotiation?
Yeah, it's up for negotiation. That's the number that Umbaugh and Associates looked at and said, you know, really you guys need to collect about this much to cover yourselves for the remaining of the contract. And knowing that we won't collect at 100%, and knowing that we'll have new administrative costs. So we know that's kind of where we need to be to cover everything and every angle. I think we can do less than that, though. And so our goal will be to work with the council between now and April to hone that in to what number we really believe is the best for us that should come in a little bit lower than that.
What's been the overall response since this came out?
You know, it's been mixed. I get people, I just received an email just a few minutes ago from ladies saying we should have done this a long time ago. You know, you get a few of those. Not a lot, but you get a few of those. It's probably running about 3-1 in calls of people saying, I just can't afford it. Well, what they don't really understand is once I talk to them about why we're having to do it, then it makes perfect sense. You know, it's just unfortunate that this is a complicated matter when you talk about the tax caps. Some people that have a $30,000 or $40,000 home haven't seen any reduction in their taxes. But if you've got a $100,000 home or a business or an apartment building, you've seen a dramatic cut in your taxes. And so we have to make up for this trash fee. And so people who are on a fixed income say, gosh, I can't afford another, you know, $10 a month, $11 a month. And I understand that. But a lot of those same people are not paying any property taxes because they have exemptions on their property. Not all of them, but a lot of them have a lot of exemptions that bring their taxes way down, yet we're still delivering the same level of service. And so that's where it takes some discussion and some explanation. And then people are like, okay, I get it. I wish we didn't have to do it, but okay, I understand. And then you've got some people that just think you need to, you know, lay off city employees before we go to a trash fee. The thing they need to understand is the legislature has forced us in this position. They tell us you need to adopt local option income taxes or put user fees in because we don't want local government to be solely dependent on property taxes as our primary operations and service delivery revenue source. Okay, we get that, but then everybody else needs to understand that there's a big shift and change in how you fund local government in Indiana.
Do you feel you have support in the council to get this passed?
Yeah, you know, we really do. I think they understand that we have to have new revenue. We couldn't possibly lay off enough people. I mean, you'd have to lay off significant numbers of people to deal with the kind of, you know, losses we've had. And then our level of service would be awful. So that's not an option. It really isn't. We'll continue to hone that budget and manage that budget, but we need some new revenue. And the council recognizes that. They see that, you know, as I laid the plan out the other night, that we can turn this around in as short as 2 years, 4 years for sure. And that's where we need to be. We've all got to pitch in here and get this thing balanced out, because we've lost over $70 million in funding since 2009. I mean, it's a significant amount, and it keeps racking up at anywhere in between $10 and $12 million a year that we continue to lose. And so you got to have some new revenue. It's not all just on the expense side.
And speaking of new revenue, you mentioned stormwater fees, local income tax, which for some may not know what that means.
Okay. And this, what we're asking the county, city council to ask the county council to look at, is a public safety local option income tax, which is 0.25% of your income. Currently, people in Vigo County pay 1.25% for Cadjet and Edit. This would be a third tax that's mixed into that. It's the smallest one at 0.25%. So it'd be a pretty small amount of money that you would pay. You know, when you're talking about a quarter of a percent of your income, for somebody making $100,000, it's gonna be a couple hundred dollars a year. But what that allows us to do, and by state statute, it has to be specifically targeted at public safety. The county is looking at it because they gotta pay for the new jail. We're looking at it because it would pay for our 911 contract with the county. It would pay for our school resource officers that are on the city schools that we pay for, and then help us with some other public safety related expenses. And so that relieves the general fund of that burden to the tune of about $2 million a year. So once again, you know, we're losing $10 million out of the general fund. We're talking about taking this trash fee and this public safety LOIT that would help us then to offset some of those losses. It'd still be less than half of what we've lost.
So all these would help offset that, the general fund budget.
The continuing cost, because those costs didn't go away.
Right, right.
Right. The funding did, but the cost didn't go away. Mm-hmm. You know, the revenue is lost.
So, and you know, we've talked about cuts before as well. You just mentioned that now. I believe I read an article where some public safety overtime hours came up at the meeting.
It gets a little frustrating for me sometimes, because people come and they make claims and make statements and they're just not accurate. They may have a number that's accurate, but one of the things that was said at the last meeting that, you know, we've gone from $400,000 a year to $1.4 million in overtime since I've been in office from 2008 to 2015. And that's simply not true. The overtime goes up and down from year to year depending on when we hire firefighters and when they go on company. We've stayed within our budget every year, overall budget for the fire department. But if we don't hire firemen, then we shift those funds over to overtime to cover that, because you got to cover the shifts. And so I think we're going to have to do a little bit more education with some members of the council and some members of the public who like to come and throw these numbers out there. And there, you just have to qualify those numbers. You have to explain why they peaked and why they dropped. It's not that it went from $400,000 to $1.4 million. That is simply not true. And you got to look at every year. And so, you know, I see that as an opportunity to educate and help people understand how it works. They can still disagree with it, but you need to understand why it is what it is.
And I can't speak for every city in Indiana, but why does it seem like, though, here in Terre Haute, it hit the worst, the property tax caps?
It has a lot to do with how much taxable property you have and what assessed value it has. In the city of Terre Haute, we've got, you know, Union Hospital, Indiana State University, Rose Hallman, the prison, the airport, large entities that pay little or no tax. And so that's one issue. And then the second issue is our assessed value dropped. The state average during the 2010 reassessment was 0.5%. Ours dropped 7%. It's not accurate. That is just not right, but that's what happened. And so we lost another $2 million a year because of that. And so I'm hopeful that in the coming years, our assessed value will begin to increase like it really is based on the market and should be. Then we'll recover, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars a year in lost taxes. But you know, those taxes that are lost, but in the future, as assessed values go up, we'll begin to get a little bit more money each year. Not a lot, but a little bit. And so it has to do with an old community, older housing. It has to do with not-for-profits and other government entities that are not taxpaying. And just the squeeze that's put on those older industrial communities. You know, Kokomo was hit hard, and Muncie, and you can kind of go through and see those places that were more based on the old industrial model. And, you know, the cities aren't growing like communities around Indianapolis and some other areas are, and so you take the bigger hit.
Speaking of properties, there's been a student housing boom here, too, and I think we've seen that in other college towns. Mm-hmm. I see, though, that the council is hearing a zone request for more duplexes, and there's been a little bit of controversy there. What's at the heart of the debate?
You know, it's really just we've got two projects going into some neighborhoods, and so it's a little bit of a change of what's, you know, what they would normally see. And so completely understand the reaction of people saying, you know, I don't want apartments or duplexes in my neighborhood, but it's kind of finding that right balance of the proper kind of growth you have in a community. So those are kind of two that are projected to be somewhere where you wouldn't typically see that type of housing. Where the other projects that we're looking at downtown fit in very nicely. We have a multi-story building with you know, upscale housing to meet the needs of Indiana State and some other professionals that live and work in our downtown area. You know, you don't get much pushback on those because they really fit in that kind of a complex. So I think it's really just the fact that these are something new going into an area that have traditionally not seen that type of development.
How big is the boom in terms of the student housing changing the landscape of downtown?
Well, it's big. You know, the first project was two projects have been done. We had one that was done by ISU, so kind of the public sector, public-private partnership, and then a totally private one that opened in the old Deming Hotel recently. Both of them were totally leased out before they ever opened their doors. Both of them have a waiting list. And so other developers see that there's an opportunity here. You know, ISU is redoing some of the housing on campus, and they're combining and reducing the amount they have, really, to give bathrooms and things to the older housing. And so that creates opportunity just outside the campus then for private housing. And you're just seeing a lot of students that have a little bit more money that would rather prefer to be two or three blocks away from the campus than be right in the middle of it. So there's a demand for both, and it seems like the demand is there, and both ISU and the private sector are meeting that demand.
But I assume, too, there has to be that balance, even in the downtown area, in terms of, you know, how much is too much student housing, mm-hmm. and will it drive away some of the other businesses or public, more of the, you know, retirement type residents who live here as well? Is it there yet, or is that something that you...
I guess right now I think it's a good problem to have because the market kind of typically shakes itself out. At some point you'll reach that maximum amount of student housing, but there's probably much more room for professionals, much more room for senior housing that we'll see what happens. As more people come downtown, whether they're students or others, then there's a bigger demand for retail. So whether it's restaurants or shops, grocery, whatever you need, that once those students, kind of what's first, are bringing that demand downtown, then the other things I think will soon to follow because you'll have all the amenities you're looking for to live in an apartment building downtown. So I expect a continued growth. I don't think it'll be at the same booming rate we're kind of seeing right now, or at least the activity of seeking these opportunities, but I think you're going to see continued development.
And then there are things I'm sure that you have to think about in terms of infrastructure.
Parking's a big one.
I was just going to mention parking.
That's always right there. It's exactly. Like people, they immediately say that. You know, our infrastructure overall is very good. You can get in and out of downtown really easily, but parking will become an issue. And really, the first two projects have not had the impact that we thought they might. Not, I'm saying we as a lot of the pushback I got from the community. We've not seen the serious problems. But they're established now. They're here. We kind of know what that looks like. The next one that comes along will put more pressure on us. The next one, more pressure. And so we have to then begin to deal with looking in that 5 to 10 year range of what are we going to do to meet the demand. We've still got 2 parking garages that are downtown that are underutilized. So we've still got room to grow, but people like to park right in front of the building where they're going in. And, you know, and when you have development, it's all good and leads to parking issues anywhere. And so that's something we'll have to address in the long run.
Couple quick questions, just statewide news, legislation, and I wanted to ask you especially about this one about passed to help control pseudoephedrine from pharmacies. Of course, that's used to make meth. You've been a force behind that and through getting tougher legislation. Are you happy with the progress that was made at the State House?
We could have done more. I guess I'm surprised because at the beginning of the session, it looked like it really wasn't going to go anywhere. You know, people introduced some bills that were a little tougher, but you could just see I can sense that. I've been around this long enough now, and others can say, you know, it's not going to get the traction that it really needs. But then kind of towards the end of the session, some things started picking back up again. So I think it'll be better than nothing, obviously. But we've just got to really hit on that. And we need to make sure Indiana falls in the same categories as these other states that have done it where the labs have dropped off. Yes, I understand it'll come from Mexico. I get it. Heroin's coming in here. We get that. But we got to do everything we can to not let that reinvent itself, because a lot of these drugs go through cycles and meth will come back if we don't do something about it today. And it's here, it's still here, it didn't go away. You're just not seeing as many labs because there's easier ways to do it. These one pot meth labs and things, and they need the pseudoephedrine. So let's take care of the root of the problem.
A lot of talk on road funding still up for debate at the State House, especially yesterday, talk of the raising cigarette and gas taxes, and then there's this plan that would take a one-time infusion of state surplus money. What would best help Terre Haute and other cities in Indiana for a road plan?
Well, obviously, we need long-term funding, and I don't think anybody disagrees with long-term funding. They just don't know how to get there. It's an election year. Nobody wants to talk about raising taxes. I get all that. But at some point, we got to solve that problem. So I'm hopeful that next year, I don't know what will come out of this session. I mean, we still only got 2 days, 3 days, whatever, you know, here left. So what they come out with, I think, will be the basis for where the discussion picks up again next year. I would see some temporary things to happen for this year so we can move ahead. But then those long-term solutions will probably be more decided next year or in the future after that. So how's it going to help Terre Haute? We need long-term funding, but I also need a short-term infusion. You know, it costs us more every year to fix the roads. There's more roads to be fixed, you know, through annexation and things that have happened in the city. And so we never have enough. Our money doesn't go up. It stays about the same every year, yet costs continue to go up. So I'm hoping this one-time infusion of some money. And you know, what's funny about that is, those are local option income taxes that were collected. It's our money anyway. They hold back some of that. And so what a perfect way to give us a quick infusion of cash so that we can go work on some roads this year. So I really applaud that effort, and that makes perfect sense. But I'm really looking forward to that long-term solution, because we need to build our plan up much bigger than what it is today. Just don't have the funding.
Last question. I just wanted to bring up the presidential election, because of how Vigo County has been seen as a bellwether. I know you spoke on this too in different publications I've read about. Mm-hmm. Selecting the presidency only twice since 1888. Why Vigo County?
I just really think there's a nice mix of people here. You know, you've got people on both the left and the right. You know, universities tend to bring in more people on the left. There's a lot of conservative people here, just because kind of the basis of what Indiana is, you know, and people that live around here. So I think we just have a great mix of people that come to our community, whether they live here or they work here or they go to the, you know, universities. And so when you talk to people here and people actually vote, you get that mix. And when people tend to go with the general thinking of election cycles are always different. Are you ready to throw the people out? Do you want to keep the same folks in? Here, they tend to gravitate towards people who deliver and do things that make sense for Terre Haute and Indiana. And I just think Terre Haute specifically then becomes that bellwether, but just because of our mix of people. We've got low-income people, high-income, educated people, non-educated people. I mean, it's just a total melting pot here. And I think that really is neat about what Terre Haute is. You've got union workers and you've got non-union workers. You've got just a little bit of everything. And so I think traditionally people here are more conservative than anything, but they want good government. And so they'll vote that way. And if they think the guys that are in there now are need to go, they'll throw them out and put the person in who they see best. And to only get it wrong two times in the history of presidential elections is kind of amazing. And so I maybe there's other reasons that I've not uncovered, but it really just seems like people here are pretty common sense.
How does that melting pot that you just described, though, does that help or hurt you run a community like that?
I think it helps because you get a lot of different ideas. You get a lot of different perspectives. You have to meet demands of people because, you know, when you're the mayor, it doesn't matter whether it's Republican or Democrat. It really doesn't. It's all about serving people. And when you have that melting pot, you get a lot of different perceptions and ideas and thoughts about how things ought to be done. And people are, you know, they give that feedback. They're very supportive of what we're doing. They love to see the community growing and moving forward. And I just think that's really all a part of it, is just that kind of just that diversity and just the variety of people that bring something to the table that help make Terre Haute a better place.